It's the place Americans promise to migrate to whenever they're unhappy with politics or gun laws. And it happens to be one of the most beautiful countries in the world. Blue lakes, rocky mountains, lush forests, not to mention a vibrant cultural life. Where am I talking about? Canada. And tonight we're headed there in Monday Night Travel with Quentin Long. He's the editor of Australian Traveller magazine. Good evening to you, Quentin.
Evening.
Now, you reckon Canada's shaping up to be one of the hot destinations of 2017. Why is that?
More, Tony, why not? I mean, it's got everything we look for in a destination. It's got incredible wilderness. It's got incredible people who are friendly, welcoming. It's got a variety of cultures. It's not monocultural at all. You know, you have the Aboriginal culture, you have the French culture, the Maritimes are different to the West Coast. It's just such a variety, huge landscapes, huge wildlife, and it's just a real, it's a BBC documentary with David Attenborough in the flesh everywhere you go.
It's already a pretty popular destination for Australians, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's growing very, very quickly. They're looking at sort of 20% growth year on year. And also then add to that the sort of safety element, the anxiety around the whole North America, and really Trump has put a lot of anxiety into people's travels to America, unfortunately. And then the exchange rate. We've had some gains in the exchange rate. And so really, as a package, this is the time for Canada to shine. And it's doing really, really well.
It of course, has its stunning landscapes. There's a lot of culture, which I'll come to in a moment. But let's start with wildlife and talk about some of Canada's great wildlife experiences, because you can literally walk with grizzlies?
Yeah, this is an incredible experience in British Columbia in a little sort of place called the Mitchell River. And so it is so unique. You know, the whole bear safety is so drilled into you, but yet there's this guy, he's called the Bear Whisperer, who will take you, well, up to three people, on a walk through a river that is full with salmon who have spawned and are starting to die. And so you have this incredible carnage around you of these fish who are dying, and obviously is a feast for the grizzlies. And so they all come down to this river and start feasting on this salmon. And because there's so much food around, they're not really concerned about the slow-moving protein that humans are, and get on with their job. So you can walk whilst these bears are feeding. It is an incredible, again, that whole BBC documentary in the flesh, but really visceral, because you have the smell of the fish, you have these waders on, you've got the river, you've got the huge caribou mountains. It's just astonishing, and again, only in Canada
wow,
kind of experience.
That sounds unusual. Yeah. Speaking of bears, there's the Spirit Bear in British Columbia. What's the Spirit Bear?
Yeah, so this is a really unique bear. It's not an albino bear. It is a white, brown, or grizzly bear who is is caused by a recessive gene. So it's a bit like blue eyes, except there's only about 500 of them in the whole world. And so they're very, very special. And they've obviously got lots of meaning for the Aboriginal people of the area. And they're on the Inside Passage part of the British Columbia. So that's that part of the British Columbia right on the West Coast, where you have all those islands that go all the way up to Alaska. And I mean, we use that word so much and it's so overused, but I can't find a better description. It is pristine. You know, you feel like the air is more oxygenated or something, and that smell of that piney forest from British Columbia, and then you have these exotic, beautiful orange whitish bears that come out of the wilderness, and you know that when you spy one, there's only 400 of them. Such a unique, fantastic experience, because it is a sort of temperate rainforest as well, which you don't associate with Canada. So an incredible
experience. Spiritual moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And you feel really privileged, and I think that's what Canada makes you appreciate, the privilege that we have to be able to commune with nature like that.
And we're not finished yet.
No.
Polar bears and beluga whales in Churchill.
Yeah, so again, at the other end of the spectrum, here in the sort of flat prairie lands of Manitoba, you get this journey up to a crazy place full of wonderful characters and people, which is Churchill. And you can get out on the tundra and do the tundra buggies and see the polar bears that come up onto the tundra buggies as well. And or you go to some of the lodges that they have, and you can go for a walk with the polar bears, who are, you know, in that sort of somnambulist walk where they're starving and they're looking, waiting for the ice floes to come so they can go to the pups. But then there's a really beautiful experience involves the beluga whales, those beautiful white almost dolphin-like, curious creatures. They're almost like the monkeys of the sea because they are so curious and they come and play with you. And so you get in the thick neoprene suits and you get into the Churchill River and just on Hudson Bay and the belugas come up and they start whistling, they start interacting with you. They're very curious. They come right up and sort of do duets with you because you whistle with them and they'll whistle back.
It's wow.
And it really, again, when you see wild nature, not at all tame, in that flesh, interacting with you in that way, it is transformative.
And in its home environment.
Absolutely. And you're on their terms, which I think everyone loves. Same with the bears that you obviously commune with as well, but really unique experiences.
Okay. Extraordinary stories about the wildlife experiences. Let's talk culture now. Go to Newfoundland and Fogo Island.
Yeah. This is probably one of the experiences of my life that changed me the most for so many different reasons. But Fogo Island is the largest island off Newfoundland, which is an island in itself. And in 1992, the Canadian government closed down the cod fisheries, which decimated the whole economy of Newfoundland. And so you had these remote communities on Fogo Island. There was 11 different communities who didn't have anything to do with each other really until roads were built in the 50s and 60s. And you had that they were so remote and they were so isolated that they were basically populated by Irish indentured fishermen a lot. And you had these little places like a place called Tilting where the Irish language, accent, words remained. And so you have these people who speak with a broad Irish accent. When they go to Ireland, the Irish don't even believe they're Canadian. And they retain the sort of 400-year-old language of some of the words they use is 400 years old. And so they have retained this amazing culture.
Wow, this is a story I've never heard before.
Oh, absolutely. And the whole of Newfoundland is full of these little pockets of island. But what happened was there was a lady who was a very successful. She was given a scholarship and went to university because her father was obviously decimated and very poor. And she got a scholarship to go to university in Montreal, becomes the CFO of one of Canada's most successful IPOs, tech IPOs. And so it becomes very, very wealthy. And she starts to give Fogo Islanders scholarships to do the same thing she did. Except that one of these scholarship presentations, one of the mothers walked up to her and said, "Zita, I really appreciate everything you're doing, but you're paying our children to leave." And from that moment on, she was just struck with the problem that was all she's doing is accelerating the demise of these cultures and these remote communities.
Yeah.
And she set about fixing that problem. And so what she did was she built an inn. And it is such a euphemism because it's a 26-room luxury experience, this incredible modern architecture amongst these old sort of clinging to rocks, these windswept, barren, beaten-up rocks, and there's this huge modern structure, and it has 26 luxury suites. And so what she did was try as hard as she could to find local people to build it, design it, build everything that goes into it. So everything that goes into the hotel is largely built on the island by islanders, and it rejuvenated their economics. And she got artisans to come in and help them make the furniture. And so she transformed this island that was so forgotten by the world into this immersive experience. And I think it changed me for that idea that you can be empowered to change the world one step at a time. And there are people doing it.
All right. So from the Irish presence to the French presence, do we say Quebec or Quebec?
Quebec and Quebec. The Quebecois. And they are crazy. They're just certifiably nuts. And you've got to embrace it and love it. I mean, I don't know where to start with this, but let me give you a few examples. In Quebec City, I'm walking through the markets and there's a stuffed emu, a full-size stuffed emu. And I walk in and say, "What are you doing with my bird, people?" And the lady says, "It's an emu." And I said, "Yeah, I know it's an emu, but what are all these products?" And so she's selling meats and she's selling cosmetics and creams all made out of emu products. And so a dietitian in Quebec has found that the emu meat is one of the best meats in the world because it's low in fat and high in it. And so the whole of Quebec has emu on its menus in different places. Like I had in the middle of Quebec, I had emu tartare at a restaurant. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. They have an emu farm of 400 emus just outside Quebec City, which this woman now propagates and sells the products within Quebec. But the other thing that I love about the Quebecois is that they are fiercely French, and they're so French that the French don't accept it. So when I was talking to one lady who went to France and started speaking Quebecois, and and the woman responded in English. It was the highest of insults. And the problem for the Quebecois is that they speak, again, a dialect of French. It's like us speaking Elizabethan English.
Oh, okay.
And so they just don't, the French don't like it.
We are visiting Canada as part of Monday Night Travel here on Summer Nightlife, and our tour guide is Quentin Long, editor of Australian Traveller magazine. Before we talk about some of the extraordinary scenery, I just want to, another question about the culture, obviously, about the Aboriginal, the Indigenous culture. Where and how do you see that portrayed?
Yeah, look, there's one of the lovely things about Canada is I think they've done this better than most nations, and in talking respectfully, meaningfully, and in an empowered way about their Aboriginal culture and or First Nation. I think it starts with that concept of First Nation. And so they've had a very similar history. And so one of my most powerful moments for me was I was lucky enough to go to a place called Haida Gwaii. Now, Haida Gwaii is also known as the Queen Charlotte Islands. And I went to an art centre where the artefacts had been taken away from the Aboriginal people, the Haida Gwaii, in a during a potlatch raid. So potlatches for the Aboriginal people there are a ceremony. They're a form of government. They're a form of ceremony. They're a form of culture and community. And they were outlawed by the Canadian government in 1921. One was raided, and all their artifacts, all their cultural artifacts, were removed. They have now been returned and are now in a beautiful cultural centre in Haida Gwaii. And so you get a beautiful tour. But before you go into the cultural centre, there's a small plaque in front of an abandoned field almost. And it tells you the story that there was once a school there. And the school was the place where the children who were removed from Aboriginal families were sent. They were almost enslaved in the way they were treated. They were abused both physically, sexually, mentally. And it had this whole horrible history that resonates with us as Australians. Mm. And then in 1990-ish, I think it was, or maybe a bit later, some of the victims of that came back and helped pull it down.
Oh.
And so they, and from that...
And that's just the plaque and the
bare
field.
And that's the plaque
now.
And that's it. And then you have the cultural centre next to it. And then you then go to see, if you're very lucky, you go down to Haida Gwaii and see some of the poles that remain there, and they have watchmen who look after them in these abandoned villages that were deliberately targeted to introduce smallpox to wipe out the populations, and went from 12,000 people to 500.
Mm.
And they still have these gorgeous, one of the most spiritually amazing areas of the world, and they have these gorgeous old totem poles that are massive, like they are a meter and a half in diameter, that stand there, and you get to do a very beautiful experience of just walking around them and understanding what they were and what they did. So yeah, it's a very interesting history, done very, very well. And that's just, that's very hard. Haida Gwaii is very hard to get to, but throughout Vancouver and the West Coast particular, I'll give you another example. Vancouver Airport has one of the best collections of that Northwest Pacific Coast Aboriginal people in the airport. They have it in the airport. They're one of the best art collections. It's fantastic, and they really do a great job. That no one's perfect, but they do a great job at making sure it's accessible and that people start to really interact with it.
Wow, important to show that respect, though, and very powerful experiences. Yeah. Again, needless to say, the landscape, the countryside of Canada. We've all seen, if you haven't been to Canada, those trains winding through with the glass bubble top roof and the extraordinary landscape. Are they as impressive up close and personal?
Do you know, as a travel writer, Canada creates or presents a real struggle. Is it because it's very difficult to do them justice? And the images obviously do them some justice. But until you are standing there and you smell the forest and that beautiful, crisp, fresh air, and you hear the noises and you see it in 360, and you feel like you're going to fail no matter what you write.
You're just running out of superlative.
Yeah. You know you're never going to be able to capture it. And for me, that sense of I can't do this justice is overwhelming, particularly about all the landscapes. So obviously we know the Rockies. And the Rockies, until you've sat there and seen places like Lake Moraine and Lake Louise and seen that incredible green water and those sheer, fierce, rugged landscapes, it's hard to do. But beyond that, even the flatness of the prairies hold a sense of mesmerization and of you know, that continuum that this goes on forever. That's a, it's a weird thing to interact with. But the place that I think does it the most is the Yukon, which is the outback for Canada, the Northern Territories are. And the Yukon is that incredibly vast. The vastness is, you know, in Australia we get that beautiful sense of the big sky, and you get that in the Yukon, except it's now green and it feels lush, but it's not really, and it's severe and it's dangerous and it's absolutely untouched. And then on completely on the other side of the country, on the east, you get to the Maritimes, which is where you have that French flavor, but you then have a very different, much more lush, much more, and I hate to use it because it's so overused, but everyone associates Anne of Green Gables, obviously, with that area, but, and it's true. It's that idyllic, beautiful quaintness.
Prince Edward Island.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of quick questions.
Yep.
Best time of year to visit Canada?
Depends what you're after.
It's open all year round.
Yeah, it is. I mean, obviously the ski experiences, but you don't have to be a skier to go in winter.
By the sounds of things, like any trip, do your research for what you, in particular, your experience, whether it's the skiing, whether it's a cultural experience or the wildlife or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and so for the Churchill, the time of year around there is about September, October, which is the time. So there's something for everyone, and just find out when's right for you.
But for everything you've said to us, give yourself plenty of time in Canada. Oh. Don't do Canada in a hurry.
No, and get ready to want to come back.
Well, I'd say anyone who ever had Canada on their wish list is going to bump it up a bit now after hearing what you've had to say, Quentin.
Thanks you very much, Tony. But I can't do it justice until you're there.
All right. Well, you've done a great job, I reckon, explaining it all to us. And I think a lot of people will be seriously looking up Canada as a holiday destination. Very good to meet you, and thanks for joining us.
No trouble. Thanks, Tony.
Monday Night Travel on Summer Nightlife. And our guest has been Quentin Long, editor of Australian Traveller magazine. And we've been travelling through Canada.